Blog Talk Radio.
And baseball fans everywhere. My name is Michael LeColin, a.k.a. the Brooklyn Charlie Blogger, and I welcome you back to the Metsian Podcast. How you feeling? Feeling good? The Mets won the series against the Atlanta Braves, our division foe, the defending champion Atlanta Braves. How do you feel? We're going to talk about it. Rich was unable to make it this evening, so on his behalf and my own and the Metsian Podcast, let's bring in my other partner, Sam Maxwell, very quickly. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. This was a great series. You know, we're going to get into the depths of it all, but honestly, I think it's the most impressive series win of the year.
Mets fever is in the air. So to help us speak of the symptoms of summertime, and this pennant race that's unfolding before our eyes is Jeff Cohen, who partners with Leonard Aberman on the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast. Actually, I say the BBQ Podcast. So let me rewind and say the Baseball and BBQ Podcast. Jeff, forgive me for stumbling, but welcome nonetheless. Good friend of the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be back. And listen, I make that mistake all the time, too, so no worries.
So, gentlemen, let's jump right in and talk a little Mets baseball. Good times. You know, a lot of times people wish they can go from opening day right to the playoffs. But you got to play the season and you have to play the games. And like I always say, every season writes its own narrative. And right now it's pretty positive. The Mets and Braves have played 7 games this season to date, and the Mets have taken 4. That kind of fits in a playoff series, doesn't it? I'm toying with everybody now. 4 of 7 games the Mets have won from the Braves this season, with 12 more to go. The Braves were hot. You know, in June, they started out that month with a 14-0 winning streak. And, you know, they wrapped up the month of June with the 21-6 record, and now they're 9-4 in July. The Mets, Sam, since the last time we spoke on June 30th, have gone 8-5. They arrived in Atlanta, 1.5 games in first place, and they depart Atlanta, 2.5 games in first place. So a lot of positive vibes coming out of Georgia. How feel you?
Well, you know, I have to start with that first game. I'm not so confident, retrospectively, that the Mets win this series if they don't win that first game. I think that first game was crucial. Of course, it was amazing that we had Scherzer on the mound just to set the tone, both emotionally and physically. And you also have Lindor, who showed himself throughout the 3 games, including the game that we unfortunately lost, being the leader, both defensively and offensively, that, like Mike, you know, you and I kind of talked off air, he's being paid to be. And regardless of that average, the numbers, and I was just reminded while watching the encore on SNY right now, that he's having a historic season for shortstops in the senior circuit. He has the most RBIs for any switch-hitting shortstop in the history of the National League. And regardless of how much I would love that batting average to be .275, he's making it count when it matters with the numbers that he does have that are at a historic nature. And, you know, we're talking about somebody that could very well have not only 30-plus, but possibly like 33, 34, 35, and who knows what kind of RBI numbers at this point. You know, I think both himself as well as Pete have kind of tailed back a little bit from their crazy historic RBI pace. But that's really, like, when you look at the series, and especially the way it began, that's where I see the success. And I think that I will also mention that it's clear these players are not affected like the fans are from the historic vibe around the New York Metropolitan. And, you know, I've generally been an optimistic fan, but I get why people would be, in the wake of last year, in the wake of generally everything, they'd still be a little trepid. Maybe some of the attendance numbers can show that some Met fans are just, like, in wait-and-see mode, partially. But you're seeing a historic team, really. And when their backs are against the wall so far, they have responded. And I you know, it would be nice to get a little bit more win streaks going on at some point to really pad this again. But at the same time, the fact that they're so resilient and that they are the narrative of the entire season is winning series, that if they continue to do that, hopefully they can win the last series of the year.
Jeff, how do you feel? Here we are, mid-July. Mets are still in first place. Just took 2 out of 3 from the Braves. And as Sam says, Mr. Lindor is earning his paycheck. How do you feel about it?
Absolutely. I totally agree with Sam. This series was, I would say, impressive. Impressive to win the series because coming into the series, they weren't really hitting all that well. And when you have the lineup with Mark Canha being in the cleanup spot on Friday, and today was Luis Guillorme in the cleanup spot, missing McNeil, missing Marte, and yet still able to take 2 out of 3, it was very impressive that they were able to do that. And Scherzer set the tone Friday night. I agree. If we didn't win that one game, I don't think we win the series. But Scherzer willed the team to win. He was absolutely fantastic. And just the way the Mets came out and just took the series, they pitched fantastic. Even though David Peterson had a little hiccup yesterday, he still pitched pretty well. They just didn't score for him. They only scored one run yesterday. But today, they took it to Morton, and Bassett pitched outstandingly. And when you get good pitching, the good hitting will come around. And, yes, Lindor is having, the average isn't up there, what you expect. But you know what? Driving runs. That's what's paid to do, driving runs. And he's top 5 in baseball with RBIs, historically for shortstop at this time of the year, switching shortstop. Just a fantastic series win. And, yeah, I agree with, they haven't gone on to win 8 out of 10, 12 out of 15 yet. Hopefully that will come, but just name of the game is the win series, and this one was a very impressive one to win.
I agree with you guys. Batting average isn't that important. What is important is that he's been clutch, very clutch. Between Lindor and Alonso, we're talking over 130 RBIs already. But, Jeff, you make a great point. In this series alone, Scherzer put forth a fine, outstanding effort, 9 strikeouts. Peterson pitched very well, very well. I'm not going to put that last inning on him. And Bassett today was on point. The Mets continue to get fine starting pitching, and have withstood these injuries. Scherzer's back, and DeGrom is on the way, hopefully, in 100% form. So I'm looking for better days ahead. The month of June was a little bit of a slowdown. We finished the month 1 game above par, but we're off to July and on a little better step, and things are looking up, and Sam, you're right. Game one was very important. It was a great first step against their division foe. You know, when you can put your opponent behind right off the bat, that's great. So in game two, you made them play from behind. And the other game, you know, they seized the day and won the series against, like I say, the defending World Series champions. So fun days in July. Let the series, let the season play out and continue to write this narrative. Because I guarantee we're going to be having a hell of a conversation come September. But again, I really got to hand it to the pitching and Jeff, as you mentioned, no McCann, no Marte. You know, McNeil wasn't in the lineup as well, and we still came in and accomplished 2 out of 3. So good job by then. All that being said, this series clearly defined the Mets' strengths and weaknesses. Dom is underperforming. JD is underperforming. Escobar, despite today's home run, you might still say is still underperforming. In addition to the injuries, Billy Epler has a lot to do. I tweeted during today's game that his laptop and his cell phone should be melting from overusage right now. There's 18 days left to the trade deadline. I don't want anybody bringing up the minor leaguers because they deserve a conversation unto themselves. We'll bring them up and what to do with them, be it here or shipping them out for talent. But for now, again, this series revealed the Mets' strengths and the Mets' weaknesses. So put on your GM cap. And what issues are you going to address come the trade deadline, which is only 18 days away? Jeff, I'll start with you.
I think that it's going to be what everybody's going to say. Got to get a DH in here and relief pitching. That is our weaknesses. I mean, as much as I like JD, as much as I like Dom Smith, this year they ain't cutting it. That's the harsh truth. They just not cutting it. JD can't catch up to a fastball, and Dom looks lost up at the plate, despite having a small hot streak when he came back from the minor leagues. They're just not doing it. What their average are just is just not there. I mean, Dominic Smith is batting .203. I mean, you can't have that as a DH. J.D. Davis, .240. And I thought, you know, for the last couple of years, we're saying, oh, when a DH comes to the National League, we have plenty of guys to fill that role. Well, no, we don't. We thought we did, but the Mets don't. And they need to go out and get a bona fide DH, be it the Trey Mancini from Baltimore or Josh Bell from the Nationals. Somebody that's in a short contract where they don't have to give up too much, and to take that role. And the other piece is middle relief. You know, who do you trust in that bullpen besides Edwin Diaz? You know, Lugo has been shaky lately, and Drew Smith had a great beginning of the year. Last couple of outings, not so much. I mean, I know it's a tough job, but, you know, you need someone who's going to take on that role and run with it. And we only have one lefty reliever out there, and that's Joely Rodriguez. So yeah, they need a left-handed relief pitcher to take on that role and to neutralize the opposition's left-handed batters. And you know, but you know what the problem is? That's everybody's problem. You know, everybody's gonna be looking for that. So hopefully the next Billy Epler can go look and make the right deal, and it won't cost too much. Hopefully, stay away from our top prospects because we know we've traded them away in the past, and we need to hold on to them. Obviously, Alvarez is a untouchable, and Beatty is untouchable. If push comes to shove, I would move Mauricio just because he has no place to play coming up. But it's got to be for the right person, and for a rental, I wouldn't move him for that. So yeah, middle relief and a DH. That's who I would target.
General Manager Sam Maxwell, what's your priority?
Well, there's a few things that I'd like to start with, but I guess also includes a question to you, Mike. Is Mark Vientos untouchable?
We'll discuss that. Continue. Because I want to...
So I'm looking...
I really want to converse about these minor leaguers. But I'll put you GM cap for
that. So, while looking at this, I'm wondering, you know, because Jeff just mentioned, like, you know, we shouldn't move our top prospects. They should be untouchable. So I'm wondering, like, who exactly falls into that category as I'm looking at the wild card standings in both leagues. And I forget where I saw it. And when looking at where Detroit is, which is 10 games back, and then I see also the Angels, which are right behind, who have just done completely horrendously. I mean, and this is a completely separate conversation, a total tangent, but you have to think that Joe Maddon would have done better weathering this storm, unless the entire team is just that much of an absolute garbage fire. But when you look at those two teams next to each other in the wild card standing, you do kind of wonder what you could do between those two teams, the Angels and Detroit, and you kind of get pipe dreams, if you will. First of all, what would it take for the Angels to say it's time to move Mike Trout? I think I saw it somewhere brought up on Twitter, and I'm not going to go any deeper than that by just throwing that out there and saying, you know, wait a second, this has really gotten bad over there. And then Detroit, I remember somebody saying something about Miguel Cabrera possibly being a good DH fit for a team buying. So I wonder, I just thinking about that and thinking about Miguel Cabrera down the stretch, like, I'm not sure even what his numbers look like, but I can't imagine. I don't even know what the rest of the contract looks like, but, you know, just some kind of wild and crazy ideas to throw out there at the beginning of your question, Mike.
Gotcha.
Mike.
All right. Yeah, I'm here. What's unavoidable is these minor leaguers. People are tugging on these guys like they were Stretch Armstrong. Let's go through them and why they should remain in the minor leagues, why they should be promoted, why they should be traded, why they should not be traded, et cetera, et cetera. Jeff, you mentioned Ronnie Mauricio, and he's a shortstop, and he's not going to crack the Mets infield with Lindor around. We know that. So, yes, I would say he's definitely available, but the price has to be right. I'm going to let you comment on that. But there's a couple other guys, Francisco Alvarez, obviously, Brett Beatty, and Sam, as you mentioned, Mark Vientos. Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty started out as third baseman. Brett Beatty's still there. Mark Vientos, not so much. He's been playing a lot of first base this season. And it looks like that's going to be his home in the future. In discussing all these guys, I'm against promoting any of them before the trade deadline, just so they can continue what they're doing in the minor leagues and continue to build upon their mystique and trade value. Why bring them up and potentially expose them and lose trade value with the deadline approaching in 18 days. So leave them in the minor leagues and let other teams imagine what they can do for their organization and what costs are involved. Let their imagination run wild. Anybody hear that stack and have a good one? Does anybody hear that or is it just me?
Yes. No, I heard that too.
Okay. So, again, Mark Vientos. You know, I'm opposed to bringing any of these guys up prior to the trade deadline. Again, let's build up and continue to raise their value on the minor league level and let other general managers' imaginations run wild with themselves. So Francisco Alvarez, he's 20 years old. He's proving he can hit a baseball. He's selective. But he still needs work behind the plate. And I don't think his work as a backstop is major league caliber just yet. Jeff, can he serve as a designated hitter? Perhaps. I just don't want to see it. I want to see development. That's my priority with him, Francisco Alvarez. I want to see him develop more as a receiver. Brett Beatty, I say let his performance do the talking. Mets have an available position at third base. That position is still up for grabs. So if he performs well, he's still at double A, but if he continues to perform well and makes a stop in triple A and does well there, I'm not against bringing him up before the season is through. Ronnie Mauricio, Jeff, as you say, that price has to be good. Good for us, not necessarily for the other team. And Mark Vientos, I brought up that he's, you know, destined to be a first baseman. At least that's the way it looks. Can he serve as that DH and give Pete Alonso a break at first base? Perhaps. But I'm not the type who's going to rush these guys up. Is there precedence to bring these guys up? Indeed there is. 1984 Mets, 85 Mets, and 86 Mets were built, you know, with youth in the minor leagues. And we'll get into Keith Hernandez, who led that group of youth a little later in the show. 2015 was another instance where youth led the way into the playoffs. So, you know, could this be another instance? I don't want to say we're there. I don't want to rush. Haste makes waste. With all that being said, I'll let you guys pick up and take this wherever you want. This is minor leaguers. Any and all that I've mentioned, whatever your opinions are, let them off your chest. So, Jeff, I'll start with you, sir.
Okay, thanks. You have to remember 2015, they did bring up a double-A player named Michael Conforto, and he did pretty well with the team. So, having said that, of the top guys that you've mentioned, a week or so ago, I was saying, bring up Mark Vientos because he was hot, and a couple of weeks before the trade deadline, let's see if he could take on that DH role. But you made an excellent point. You know, why expose him to the major leagues? They've done that with Khalil Lee this year. They've done that with Nick Plummer this year. They brought him up, and they were older. They're 24 and 25, and they couldn't hold on to that role. So, yeah, maybe leave Vientos down there in the minor league and to build up his value. But then again, that's why I'm not the general manager. So I might bring him up just to see what he's got. So if he takes on that role and can grab it and go with it, you know, then you switch your focus to getting better pitching at the deadline. But then again, you know, leave him down there, maybe he's the piece that gets you that better pitching. So who knows? I totally agree with you, Francisco Alvarez. Leave him down. Let him develop as a catcher. And you don't want to throw him in the middle of a pennant race catching. And to have him at DH, yeah, he might perform well there, but then you're stagnating his development as a catcher. So, yeah, you need him down there. He's a marquee piece for the future, and you need him to be major league ready when he is major league ready. And right now, he's not, even though he's at Triple A. And let's see, Brett Batty, he might come in a September call-up. Let's see how he does. And there's another person down there, another player down there, but he's out in low A, Alex Ramirez, who's the number four in their prospect ranking. Also, they do have a pitcher, Matt Allen, who hasn't pitched in a couple of years. I would not trade him because he's going to need some young pitching coming up. So, yeah. I'm basically in agreement with you. Leave them down there. Let them get their reps and see if I think they can contribute with either in the future or bring up back a good trade piece with them. So, yeah, I'd probably just leave them down there and let them develop. Sam?
Yeah, you know, I think that.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
Oh.
sorry about that, guys. Real quick, Sam, before I throw it to you, I just wanted to say that, Jeff, you threw out some other names out there, very intriguing names, and I agree with you. I still hold out hope for Khalil Lee and Nick Zwack of the Cyclones. He's having a hell of a season, so I would expect him to arrive in Binghamton shortly. So, Sam, take it away.
Well, I think, for one, you just reminded me that I just need to be paying attention more to my hometown team, the Cyclones, number one. But number two, Jeff, who was the pitcher you just mentioned that you wouldn't trade that's all the way down?
Matt Allen.
Matt Allen, that's right, that name, Matthew Allen. I guess he's going by Matt now, but, like, you know, Pete Alonso, that's a whole other – but that's an entire podcast, names of baseball. But – I, you know, just like while watching Bassett on the mound right now, and you mentioning a prospect, a very highly touted pitching prospect, Jeff. You know, if just real quick tangent, if DeGrom can come back, it's really impressive the veteran presence 1 through 3 that they have at the top of this rotation, and that's not necessarily going to hold for the next few years. So I agree. You cannot be trading Matthew Allen any way, shape, or form right now. I remember when he was traded for when he was drafted, excuse me. Hopefully that wasn't a I had a knock on wood there, but that Freudian slip. But I think that when it comes to especially pitching right now, you need to keep everything intact. And I will – hold the Francisco. I think, Jeff, you kind of put everything perfectly. I think you're correct, Mike, when it comes to Francisco Alvarez. It does make sense when everything is put that way, and that's probably why they haven't been rushing him specifically. Going to Brett Beatty, I think they understand that he's probably the third baseman of the future, so they're taking their time with him, and which is why he hasn't made it to AAA, because him and Mark Vientos were together for a while in the same ranks, and they've just held it with Brett Beatty because they know Mark Vientos, either whether it's a trade chip or, like you said, maybe he could be Dom is ahead of him on the trade chip rankings. So you trade Dom, you're going to need that backup first baseman that they kind of makeshifted with J.D. Davis and Mark Canha at that particular point. But you're going to need that. So maybe that's what Mark Vientos ends up being, is that DH. And to go, like, if we want to be extremely speculative with what could happen before 8:05 tomorrow night Eastern Standard Time, maybe even they give him a chance. Well, wouldn't this be the perfect opportunity to call up Mark Vientos, however you figure out the roster – the way that would work, if you can make that happen with this particular 4-game Cubs series, now that you have a 2.5 lead going into the last series of the before the All-Star break, it wouldn't be the worst idea to try to figure out what right now before the break. I don't know. If you're telling me that I'm the GM, you called me General Manager Sam Maxwell. Thank God I'm not the COO anymore. maybe that's what you do early tomorrow morning and flying out to Chicago.
From the mind of General Manager Max Samwell. How do you like
that? Exactly. Dollar in the jar for calling me my dad's name.
You are listening to the Metsian Podcast. And, Jeff, please take some time out. Tell us what you do over at the Baseball and BBQ Podcast with your partner, Leonard Aberman, where we can find it, and your social media outlets, please.
Well, thank you. Me and Len had a lot of fun. I mean, we have had last couple of weeks had some great guests. Some of Mets related. We had on Glennon Rush not too long ago, and what We had a great conversation with Clendon Rush. He was a really good guy. Great stories about his Met days and his Chicago Cub days. We've had on Dale Scott, the former umpire, who has also some great stories. And we had our first Hall of Famer. I'm happy to announce that we had Jim Cott on. So he was terrific. So you can find us on Baseball and BBQ on all the major podcast apps. You know, Apple, Spotify, all that stuff, iTunes, I don't know more iTunes anymore, but Google Play, wherever you find podcasts, you can find Baseball and BBQ. And we have a webpage called baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And I will say coming up, I'm not sure when it will be released, but just last night we recorded a special episode with, if you remember it from ESPN, Bob Ryan, Bill Chuck, who was a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Steve Traxel. We were talking about Traxel beating Pedro Martinez 1-0 at Fenway back in 2000, just that particular game. And it was fascinating to have Bob Ryan, who's just an all-world sports writer, on there talking with Steve Traxel. It was just terrific. So please, yeah, find us on Baseball and BBQ, anywhere you find podcasts, and join us. We have a lot of fun.
Spectacular.
Sorry, guys.
Glendon Rush is very – yeah, you know, it's just Glendon Rush is just – especially, like, I think his avatar on Twitter is Kenny Powers. So Glendon Rush is all right with me.
Yes, he is fantastic.
Gentlemen, I got a quick question. About attendance. I find this very weird. In the American League, the Yankees are first at 1.5 million. In the National League, the Mets are ninth in attendance at 1.2 million. I'll just leave it at that. What do you guys translate out of that, Jeff?
Yeah, that's a little bit odd. Obviously, Yankee Stadium holds more. But it shouldn't account for that much of a discrepancy. I think it's easier. Well, from where I live, obviously, it's easy to get to Citi Field. And it's very hard to park at Yankee Stadium. I don't know why. I can't put my finger. They're both first-place teams. Mets are playing very well. I mean, go out and see Max Scherzer pitch. Taiwan Walker has been fantastic pitching this year. I mean, this is a great team, and really they should be supported more. I don't know if it's the COVID effect. One thing I do complain about is the parking. The park at Citi Field is $30, and I know that's probably on the low end compared to other stadiums in the area. I know Yankee Stadium's like $45. UBS Arena is $30.
Right.
But, you know, that's a big thing. I mean, even if you take Long Island Railroad, you take four people, that's at least $10 each way. But, you know, it's a lot of money to get there. I mean, you can buy tickets cheaper than the parking. So I know I complained to the Mets about that on their survey that they sent me. Of course, nothing's being done about it, but I can still complain about it.
Can I throw something out there, and maybe Steve Cohen eventually, you know, I don't know whether Steve Cohen's ever going to be listening to the Metsian podcast, but you never know whether he's just some night, you know, listen, he's a billionaire. Maybe he's getting high and he's sipping on scotch, like the $1,000 a shot scotch in the middle of his billionaire place. And he's just like, let me scan through random episodes of Mets podcast, and he comes across this. You know, I would suggest building in Long Island City. And I, you know, everybody has created a new ballpark who have had ballparks for only 20 years. So the precedent is there for something like this. And nothing against Citi Field, which has become substantially better, as you and I have talked about over the course of now 13 years, Mike, what was wrong and what is better about it now. The Will Pons built next to Shea Stadium only because they were cheap assholes. If you looked at what else they were looking at, Sunnyside Yards was there for them. And Long Island City / that section of Queens would have been just such a brilliant place to put a downtown ballpark, and especially considering when you look at other downtown ballparks around the country that have formed either retro or otherwise, and you look at where Yankee Stadium currently is, and unfortunately, and I hate to say this, it's the closest thing you get to a real city ballpark in New York City compared to the section of Queens that was designated best for the new suburban post-war crowd to get to. That wasn't the best place for a city team. And so I would say, why not consider again after all these years? You're only talking about, what, 13 years now, right? So we still have 7 years for this to be a consideration, even with whatever development they're trying over there with the Wilfons real estate firm. So attendance, you want to get better attendance? Get as convenient of a location as the southern part of the Bronx, as the Yankees have.
It kills me because, Sam, you know I believe there's so many things wrong with Citi Field, even today, things that they can't fix. Let me not bog anybody down with that. But the Texas Rangers and the Atlanta Braves have, you know, done just that. They got new ballparks and said, you know what, we don't like it. Let's build a new ballpark. So it's not out of the question, is it?
No,
it is.
Not out of the question.
It's not.
It's not out of the question. Go ahead, Jeff.
It's precedent. We've seen it happen before. I mean, I was shocked when the Braves just got up and left to go to the suburbs. I mean, that was a pretty new field. And Texas also. They just built a new field after just building one earlier. So, yeah, it wouldn't be a terrible idea. But let me ask you, I noticed that they're clearing out all those chop shops that were adjacent to Citi Field. Are they planning some type of development there with hotels, restaurants, like make it a baseball village like they have in Wrigley or in St. Louis? Is that the plan?
Yes. Yeah, the plan's been there for like 10 years at this point. But, you know, just it's the way, obviously, you know, you set a date for 2022 and it becomes 2028 because of all lawsuits and stuff. So, that was basically the plan, which would obviously be great. One of the things, again, I'll just throw it out there too, that when they moved from Shea Stadium to Citi Field, one of the things I actually really appreciated was that they were now pressed against those chop shops, and it used to be like parking lots in between, which was basically like Shea Stadium was in the park, not kind of separated from a Citi Field. So, and Citi Field, obviously, I said Citi Field, not Citi Field. So, you know, I actually liked the fact that they pressed themselves up against the chop shops because I thought it gave Citi Field more of a city feel.
Well, it finally happened, gentlemen. Keith Hernandez, number 17, was retired. I was watching on TV, and at some point I started crying like a baby. My mother called me up, and my nose was so stuffed like I had asphalt up my nose. And she's like, "What's the matter? Are you sick? Do you have a cold?" I was like, "No, Ma, everything's fine. No, I'm okay, Ma." I was like, "All right, Ma, you got me. I'm watching the Mets and I'm crying like a baby. Can I call you back?" And she's like, "Yeah." well-deserving, nice tribute, nice ceremony, nice speech by Keith. So what do you guys think, Sam?
So I have to admit that I've kind of been saving watching the ceremony just because I've just been a little busy and I really wanted to give it, you know, I didn't want to just be like downloading it on the subway and, you know, while like some, all of a sudden some homeless man gets on and causes a ruckus and I have to like pause it so I don't miss something. So, you know, I haven't watched the ceremony yet, but I was doing my new job, which is bartending at Rudy's, shameless plug. Everybody come see, the place Rudy's Bar and Grill, where you can get a hot dog, a shot and a beer for $5. And the way that it all specifically, before I talk specifically about Keith, the way the game unfolded where with two outs, it looked like the Mets were going to lose, and I think at that time they were going to be either a game and a half or I think it was a game and a half at that point because they hadn't been that close yet. The fact that they were going to be that, you know, was there, and it was like this mini World Series moment where all of a sudden, with two outs, everything goes right with some errors and stuff. So That was also very beautiful about it, but like we were discussing, you know, I think Keith is the perfect example of somebody that because of these weird check marks that they've listed off for offense, specifically when it comes to the Hall of Fame, Keith has gotten lost for the fact that he had like 11 gold gloves. You know, he was the best defensive first baseman the entire time he was a first baseman, which was his entire career. So I think that Keith is a perfect example of a very undervalued fellow as he comes on the encore of SNY in the booth with Gary. Keith, you know, he made his Hall of Fame career before he got to the Mets, and he wasn't here that long, but he was the main start point and anchor of that era of Mets baseball. And I believe he wasn't a Met in 90 specifically. I forget exactly how it all went, but he, of anybody from that era, because of his representation of the beginning of legitimacy other than Daryl Strawberry, really, and Dwight Gooden, who were minor leaguers when you brought Keith in. That's why 17 should should never be worn by another Met, and also shouldn't have been so weirdly given out by the Wilpons, which are now always a comedy routine. There's never any depression with it anymore. It's all going to be fine, and we can all just laugh about it.
Jeff, we remember when Keith was traded to the Mets. Neil Allen was a popular Met, but no one was sorry to see him go. Everyone knew Keith Hernandez and what we were getting. He was a prominent player, and he's so deserving of this honor. What do you say, Jeff?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the Mets are known for making really some horrible trades over the years, but they've also been known to making some pretty good ones. And getting Keith Hernandez for Neil Allen and Rick Ohmby. Talk about a steal. This was the greatest, one of the greatest trades in Mets history, maybe in all baseball history. Getting a certified gold glove, at the time, five-time gold glove award winner. He would win six with the Mets for 11 consecutive. He brought the legitimacy to that team in middle of 83, even though they didn't finish high in the standings. But, you know, we saw what happened in 84. And that whole era, 84 to 89 or 90, they were just one of the dominant teams in baseball, and it's because of Heath's leadership. And, you know, the other trade that was a great trade was getting Carter as the final piece, and Keith has talked about that. But he was the main cog who bought in, taught the young players, the Darryl Strawberries and the Dwight Goodens and the Wally Backmans and the Tim Tuffles on how to play like a professional. He was like that era Tom Seaver. When you think about it, when Tom Seaver came up in 67, he said losing isn't fun, and he build the team to turn into winners. Same thing with Keith Hernandez. He brought that legitimacy. And I got to say, I was fortunate to be in the park that day. And I also taped the ceremony because I knew I wouldn't hear the whole thing being in the ballpark. And I was like four rows from the top of the stadium. I did get in left field. I did get a pretty good view of the unveiling of number 17. Just being in that ballpark, the electricity that day, it was a love fest. For Keith Hernandez. My only complaint, I would say, and I did get a bobblehead, but they only gave up 25,000. I mean, it was 40,000 people there. Come on. Give everybody a bobblehead. Really?
I
mean, I
might watch
15,000 more.
I really might.
Jeff, that's a good point, though. You know, they should have had enough for everybody.
Absolutely. And they were very good. And whoever's in the marketing department, did you see this bobblehead? It's a part of a three bobblehead set with Lon and Gary Cohen. And Keith Hernandez is sitting behind a desk, and below him it says new. And then Keith Hernandez. Of course, the next one will be Ron Darling with the York. Ron Darling, and then Gary Cohen will be Mets. So you put them together with a New York Mets. But if you're only getting one, you know, say, what? Why does that say new on it? So, but, yeah, they should give it out to everybody. But it was a wonderful, wonderful ceremony. They mixed it top notch. And Sam, when you see the video, what they put together, yeah, you do tear up. You do tear up. That was just
I can imagine.
No, you're right, Jeff. Sam, you got to catch up. You got to get that vibe, man. It was so touching.
Well,
it really was.
I you know, because I expect that, you know. By the way, just full disclosure. At some point this weekend, I think it was even the Keith Hernandez game that I realized I had to buy MLB TV because the cut together of the game and the ceremony just wasn't enough. And I realized that I just needed to be able 2 hours after the blackout restriction to have access to the game, you know. And hey, MLB, you got me. But I might even watch the full game because I'm sure it's the entire game is also a Keith Love thing. On top of, you know, some really great moments. You know, Francisco Lindor hitting that home run off the foul pole. I mean, you know, I've seen enough. I've seen clips of it. I've seen enough of everything. But I want to see everything again. And I just love baseball.
I got to tell you, being at the game, the Mets offense was really sputtering. I mean, yeah, Alonso hit a home run, and that Francisco Lindor home run. I didn't see clear the fence of where I was sitting, but I saw his reaction. I knew it was a home run.
Right, and that's right. And Pete had the keynote address. So, like, what a game. I mean, this is a classic in Mets lore. And, you know, we're going to see it on we're going to see it on SNY as a Mets classic this offseason. But please unload all of WOR for us. Somehow figure it out. God, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
More reasons to love baseball. Jeff, Sam and I wanted to congratulate you. The last time you had Sam and I on the Baseball and BBQ podcast was prior to Gil Hodges being elected to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. You did a tremendous amount of work and put in a lot of effort championing every reason possible why he should have been in the Hall of Fame. Congratulations to you and Mets fans and Dodger fans everywhere. The quiet one is finally going into the Hall of Fame. Jeff, how do you feel about that?
First of all, thank you. Len and I take all the credit in the world. It was us. We did it. But no, but you know what? It was great. Fun to have speaking to Irene Hodges to Ed Crane Pulse, you guys to Kevin Kiernan to make that argument because, yes, he was overlooked. I was not born yet to watch him play in his prime, but you know Gil Hodges. You guys, especially, you were so articulate the way what he meant to Brooklyn and the Dodgers and the Mets when he came over to be their manager. He so deserved this long, long time ago. And it's just, I'm just so thrilled that his wife is still around to see this, for his children to be around for this, because they're getting in their 70s now. And it's just a great, I can't wait to watch it on you know, the ceremony and see Irene and Gil and his other daughter be up there along with his wife, who I think is, what, 95, 96 years old now? And to watch him get that plaque up there where it truly belonged a long, long time ago. You know, and to make the synergy complete, you know, here is Gil Hodges, the winner of the first three Gold Glove Awards. The first three. Who knows how many more he would have won had it been a Gold Glove Award. And we're talking about Keith Hernandez, who is the, you know, one of the greatest first basemen of all time, earning 11 Gold Glove Awards. The synergy right there is just amazing, isn't it?
Indeed, Sam.
I'm going to make it really personal, you know, in terms of what the Brooklyn Dodgers and Gil Hodges has meant to me. Just at some point, I latched onto this idea that nobody had thought of the greatest baseball movie series that could ever be done, which is Brooklyn and its Dodgers. And however angle you do that, you have to figure out, you have to uncover what not only Brooklyn means, what baseball means, what Brooklyn baseball means, and what players like Gil Hodges mean to it. And you uncover that there may have never been a player within Brooklyn Dodger lore that has connected with Brooklyn and has outlasted not only his death, but his baseball legacy. I don't think you, in the conversation dating back to baseball being created and Brooklyn having, you know, created in the sense of ironic biblical sense, but of baseball being developed in America, Brooklyn has everything to do with that. And because of land capacity, you know, especially, was able to have, like, you know, 65 to 75 organized baseball teams compared to Manhattan, like, 20 to 30. Gil Hodges may be the number one player connector. Casey Stengel kind of preceded him, but still does not like just shout to the way a player can, other than Jackie Robinson, how a player can connect with a community. That's basically that's, you know, and of course Carl Erskine, who's been on here and has advocated for his Indiana brother. Gil Hodges represents everything that you want out of a Hall of Famer. And over the course of my life of discovering the Brooklyn Dodgers and discovering Brooklyn, and this is where it really gets emotional for me, I've been very passive just in general in my lifetime. And the people that found me, the places in Brooklyn that I've lived, have brought me closer to the Brooklyn Dodger lore. I didn't know that I was moving in 2008 to right around the corner from Ebbets Field at Rogers in Eastern Parkway. And I went the wrong way to try to find Ebbets Field the first time I went exploring for it. And so somebody else found me that place. And then somebody else found me what turned out to be only a block and a half away from where Gil Hodges is eternally buried. And I have a poster of him getting out of the way as Jackie Robinson steals home in some random game in my place. I have now a photo I just found a frame for just the other day. Randomly, as I was cleaning out my place, I found the perfect frame for this purchased photo of Gil Hodges tagging Yogi out on a ball that must have pulled him off the base in the World Series that I have no idea. I couldn't even figure out in the purchase of like a $5 8x10 what World Series it exactly is. And I guess some experts, maybe I have to send a photo to John Thorne, you know, to tell me exactly when that moment happened. But Gil Hodges, there's just for every Brooklynite, he's still around us, basically. And I'll pass it back to you, Mike.
You're mute.
Moment of silence.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. It is a moment of silence. Sam, you know, when you put Gil Hodges in conversation in the local area, especially here in Brooklyn, it is an emotional subject. He does mean that much to us. And Jeff, you nailed it. Congratulating the Hodges family and their extended family. Even on Twitter, of the three of us, I believe we're all friends with Noelle Gold. She's part of the extended family. So congratulations to her as well.
Absolutely.
You know, later this month, it will be the Hall of Fame ceremony. And I'm so looking forward to that. This is a day that's been a long time coming. It'll be special. So, Sam, you know, your emotions are right on point. Gentlemen, I just got one more topic for the night, unless you guys got other things you want to pass around the room. But the Mets are headed to Chicago now, and to me that's a secondary matter. I think this will be the last time we speak again before the All-Star game. So the Mets have four players headed to Los Angeles: Edwin Diaz, Starlin Marte, Pete Alonso, and Jeff McNeil. I think that's appropriately representative of the Mets' 2022 season. So, Jeff, what say you about that?
Well deserved, each and every one of them. Absolutely. And even though he was not selected, I consider Taiwan Walker this year an all-star as well. He is pitching out of his mind. He's 7-2 with a 2.63 ERA, so he is, in my view, even though he didn't make the All-Star team, he is he should be one of the All-Stars. So I'm going to count him as well, if you don't mind, in my All-Star team. All well-deserved. And we wish them have a great time. I think Alonso is going to compete in the Home Run Derby again. It might be a little tougher this time, but I know he loves hitting in Dodger Stadium. So maybe he has an edge. I'm just a little worried about Marte coming off an injury. It might be smart to him to miss the game just to get that extra time. I don't know if he's going to be playing this weekend. I know he's not on the IL yet. He's missed this past series with the Braves. I'm not sure if he'll be ready for the Cubs. But it might be smart to shut him down and let the whole his leg or groin area heal.
Mark Vientos. I just figured it out. GM Sam Maxwell strikes again.
Well, Jeff, I agree with you 110% about Marte and Walker. Sam, what do you think, man?
Oh, applause. I would not take away any of these All-Stars for what I would say in terms of, like you mentioned, Taiwan Walker. But also, you know, we were talking about Francisco Lindor, and the average is probably what completely shut him out of this. But, again, he's going to have some pretty impressive home run and RBI totals, including runs scored. when it's all said and done, if he doesn't get that average up. And I'm hoping that he can still. Like, I just love 260 to finish the season, if you will. Like, he was doing that at some point after his initial explosion of the year, and then he kind of regressed, but he kind of then at some point battled back to 260 and 265, and then he's kind of just settled into kind of 250, 245 for a while. So that's probably what kept him off the All-Star ballot, but like we said, he's having a historic switch-hitting shortstop season, so... That's pretty All-Star worthy as well. Max probably would have been on had he not been injured. So Mets, you know, I'll throw this out there too. You know, when you're having like a potential 100-win season, you're going to have some All-Stars. But we could also be looking at like, so far, and luckily the Mets had their you know, they held their own against the team that's trying to jump them right now, the closest team that's trying to jump them right now. But it's kind of in the way the Braves have come on after, you know, let's be honest, they played a lot of chump teams, but they were able to take advantage of that, and that's a sign of a good team and a team who is the defending world champion. But it kind of reminds me that we could be looking at a battle similar to the Dodgers and the Giants last year, kind of tying in a classic Gil Hodges rivalry there. We could be looking at two teams trying to battle for the division going against 100 wins. So let the summer begin. This is really – the All-Star break is really, you know, the line where we really get to see what all of these teams are made of.
You're right, though. 88 games down, 74 to go. 12 of them are going to be against the Braves. You know, so unless you guys got any other things on your mind you want to get off your chest, going once.
I just want to say that the – that of the how many games they have left? 74? Most of them are going to be to the east of the Mississippi River. So we're not going to have any late games. Oh well, they to go out to Oakland in late September for series.
Jesus, randomly late September.
Well, you know what? It was supposed to be the last week, but they moved the schedule, you know, from the lockout. So when I saw the schedule, I go, why are they going to Oakland in the last week? But, yeah, so it's like the next to last week they got to go to Oakland. Other than that, I think all the games are on the Eastern time zone, which is great.
I'm looking at it, and it appears you are correct, sir. We have that Oakland series, September 23rd, which is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, the 23rd through the 25th of September. Then we come back home, play the Marlins twice, go back on the road to Atlanta. That's going to be a big showdown, and then we close out the season against Washington at home. So it's going to be fun. Sam, you nailed it. Jeff, you nailed it. It's going to be a fun summer. The dog days of summer are dead ahead. So with that being said, let's go Mets, and we will move on to our final word. Before we do that, Jeff, on behalf of Rich Sparago, who couldn't join us this evening, I thank you for your appearance this evening on the Metsian Podcast. You're a great friend of the show. Thank you very kindly for all your insights, and thank you again for having us on that wonderful Hodges special that you put together. And again, congratulations. And I will start with you, sir, on your final word.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be with you guys. I love the baseball, the Mets podcast community. Just so nice and just a pleasure to talk to. I'm glad that we were, and, you know, I'm just so happy to be able to talk to you guys anytime. And you took my final word. It was fun because it's going to be a fun summer because of the way the Mets pitching staff has come about. Scherzer's back. DeGrom's not too far away. And if with those two guys starting 40% of the remaining games, I think it's going to be a fun summer. So just let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Sam, take it away.
Fun, fun, fun. Now that daddy takes us, take it away. That's it.
That's it, huh? All right, folks. That's a wrap. Let's go Mets. Enjoy the All-Star game. Enjoy the break. It'll be well-deserved. You know, recover, recoup. And like I said, let's get ready for the dog days of summer. When we return, we have that Subway Series against the Yankees, two games at Citi Field. So there's a lot of fun up ahead. Sorry we didn't talk about the NL East. I did want to do that, but we'll save that for the next time. The Phillies are hurting without Bryce Harper, and the rest of the division doesn't matter. It's us and the Braves. So let's have at it. Good night, everyone. Good night, Mets Phil. Let's go, Mets. And that's it. Have a good night, all.
Good night.
Later, guys. Let's go, Mets.